It is safe to say the new book, Farmageddon, is a searing indictment. David Healy's most comprehensive and forceful argument against the pharmaceuticalization of medicine tackles problems in healthcare that are leading, he believes, to a growing number of deaths and disabilities. Healy, who was the first to draw attention to the now well-publicized suicide-inducing side effects of many antidepressants, attributes our current state of affairs to three key factors: product rather than process patients on drugs, the classification of certain drugs as prescription only, and industry-controlled drug trials. These developments have tied the survival of pharmaceutical companies to the development of blockbuster drugs, so they must overhype benefits and deny real hazards. Healy further explains why these trends have basically ended the possibility of universal health care in the United States and elsewhere around the world. He concludes with suggestions for reform of our currently, he believes, corrupted evidence-based medical system. The new book is Farmageddon, and we welcome David Healy to the program this morning. Thank you very much for being with us, sir. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. It's good to be here.
How did you come to the dire title of Farmageddon?
Well, that was one that was coined by a friend of mine called Charles Medawar, and he was trying to convey to people that what we've got is a world where it's a little bit like when you drive your car. Each trip you make in the car may be awfully useful and very, very helpful, and you may think to yourself, well, it's great to have a car, but we're slowly producing the kinds of conditions where climate change happens. We don't see that as a consequence of each of the trips we have in the automobile. In the same way, when we have encounters with the healthcare system, very few people see anything wrong when they go along to the hospital or doctor and have what appears to be a good encounter to them. But overall, we are pushing healthcare systems in a way that's not actually going to be sustainable for the future. We're producing climate change within healthcare, and the kind of medicine that we once had, where we took problems to doctors and our doctor helped us with the problem we had, is changing to one in which the healthcare system, for its own purposes, for its own health, takes problems to us and screens us for conditions that we don't have, and often puts us on treatments that we don't need. This isn't good for us, it isn't good for healthcare, and it's not good for the economy either.
I think that while I agree with you, I do think there's probably a number of people who would argue, myself included, I guess, that the possibilities and the chances of going in the hospital into that healthcare system and having everything go rosy and perfect, those odds are getting lower and lower.
They are, yes. Unfortunately, there is a chance. I mean, it's a thing that both patients see when they go to the doctor. They see a doctor who hasn't got the time to listen to them and who often isn't looking at them even. He's looking or she's looking at the computer screen where the results of the latest measurements feature. And people who run the healthcare system even are under the impression that all medical care is about is putting the numbers right, and you don't even have to see the same doctor from visit to visit, because anyone can look at the computer screen and see what the results are and prescribe the pill that's the answer to any measurements that appear to be a problem. So there's been a real degradation in healthcare, but it's crept up on us very slowly, so that people often they're aware that things aren't quite right, they're aware that things weren't the way they used to be, but there often isn't a change from one visit to the next where they see so clear-cut a change that they're able to put a finger on just what's happening.
So I look at my father, who is 85 years old and in relative good health now, although he certainly had his shares and his ups and downs. He'll go in and there'll be a concern over his heart, and there'll be concern over his lungs and of pneumonia in the past and his eyes. And there is a degradation of the body, the natural aging process. And you talk about creeping up, but all of a sudden you realize that the man is on between 20 and 30 prescription drugs. And you think to yourself, God, well, it presents two problems. First of all, your issue, which is the medicine itself and what it's actually doing, but also the for the family and for the patient of someone who is overseeing all of that to see that pill A doesn't deal with pill B to deal with pill C, because it used to be the day where you would trust the pharmacist, but now you're getting the drugs from eight different places anyway.
Absolutely, and again, you've gone to the heart of the issue here, which is that companies have been very adept at producing, getting doctors, our patients, to measure things, and the measurement produces a problem that a pill will often be the answer for. And what they've also done is they've had control of the clinical trials that bring drugs on the market. Now, we introduced clinical trials as a means to try and rein in the pharmaceutical companies. And the next thing we did was to say that, well, if there are all these clinical trials done, we should be able to write guidelines as to what the best treatment is. Trouble is, industry have control of the trials. They only publish the trials that suit them. And in a sense, even though the guidelines are written by people who are completely independent, industry effectively control the guidelines also. And there's a guideline for hypertension and a guideline for asthma and a guideline for gut problems and nerve problems and heart problems and every conceivable problem. And it's quite possible that a person like your father may get the best care in the sense that everybody looking after his heart and his eyes and his chest and his gut are following guidelines. They're doing the best possible thing according to the evidence. The trouble is, guidelines for illnesses suit people, suit industry. What we need are guidelines for people. And it sounds like your father isn't being treated according to guidelines for people. One of the key points on which would be that once we go over four or five drugs at any one point in time, we're at real risk of being injured or killed by effects that come from the combination of all these pills. We're at a point where treatment-induced death and disability is said the fourth leading cause of death, and there are probably areas within healthcare in which it's the leading cause of death. And no one's getting to grips with this. This is a new plague that we have, that's a consequence of the way we're doing healthcare these days, which, as I said, often appears on the one hand to be offering the person the best possible treatment for each of the conditions that they have, but not the best treatment for them overall.
You use a figure in the book, which is really stunning, of the global market for pharmaceuticals is $900 billion. And that's an incredible figure, obviously. You also make the point that apart from cancer drugs, that few new drugs actually target disease. They are instead lifestyle or risk management drugs, or things that we take for antidepressants or for our cholesterol or for our blood sugar or for acid reflux or osteoporosis or sexual dysfunction. They are drugs that are not focused specifically in most cases on disease.
Yes, absolutely correct. And what we've got here is a world where before, until 30 to 40 years ago, industry made their money out of producing pills that cured an illness. Pills that meant that we didn't die, although we got out of bed, cured, and were able to go back to work. And it would have made sense, even if these pills cost a huge amount of money, it would have made sense for the economy to provide all of this treatment for free, because treatments like that would actually make us better able to compete with the Chinese, Japanese, the Indians, whoever. Problem we have now is that industry, and one of the other quick points perhaps to make about the former kind of treatment is when you treat a disease, you treat to the point where the person is cured, and after that they stop the pill. But right. These weren't the treatments that suited that actually suited the industry the best. They weren't the best for the health of the pharmaceutical companies. What was much better for them was the idea of treating risk factors. And for every one person who has a serious illness, there's going to be at least 10 and maybe up to 100 who have a risk factor for an illness. Where you treat an illness until it's cured, you potentially treat risk factors forever. Where very few people have more than one illness at a time, you can have lots of risk factors at the same time. And it would be fine if treating risk factors like this really did make us feel better and better able to work. But in fact, often what you're doing when you're treating a risk factor is you're treating a person who isn't ill, who actually feels quite well, and you put them on a treatment that can often make them feel very unwell. Drugs like the drugs we take to lower our blood cholesterol levels can leave you with severe muscular aches and pains, can leave you with problems with your memory and a range of other things, which means that you or I wouldn't be able to work as well as we're able to work normally. So rather than getting us back to work and better able to compete with the Chinese, these are pills that will often mean that people who were at work aren't able to work as well as they have been doing, and they're off work, and generally speaking, were less able to cope with or to compete with the Germans, the Chinese, and others. And at the same time, where before we had been handing over a large amount of money, but we gained from it, now we're handing over even more money, but ending up less able to do the kinds of things that we'd hoped that this money would buy us.
David Healy is our guest. We're talking about his book, Pharmageddon. How much of this is on us, in the sense of when we go to the doctor and we're not feeling well and we go to an urgent care or to our general practitioner, our GP, and we go in, it seems that, now I'm not a big lover of taking pills and I don't like that. However, you do feel you feel somewhat cheated if you go in sick and you don't come out with a prescription for something.
That's correct. And I think the problem, it's interesting that you say how much is of this problem is on us. I think it isn't really on us, but it's on doctors. I think often these are the people who've failed us. Now, I make this point as a doctor who prescribes drugs. Part of the problem is, you see, these drugs are available on prescription only. And this means that, you know, when they're brought on the market first, we have every reason to think that these drugs are going to be riskier than alcohol or nicotine or cocaine or Valium or stimulants or drugs like these. But in fact, a curious combination of things happens. Because doctors, you see, are the true consumers. When you say us, the consumers of the pills are really doctors. And they consume by putting the pill in you and me. And they don't realize that they're the greatest, they're at the focus of the greatest marketing power on earth. Where companies like Apple and Microsoft and General Motors have huge marketing budgets, they're dwarfed by the marketing budgets of the pharmaceutical companies.
Where well, when
Apple
I...
and General Motors market to all of us, the pharmaceutical companies just market to doctors, and they understand doctors better than doctors understand themselves.
So
and they're able to generate great pressure on the doctor to make sure the weak consume.
I apologize for interrupting. It's just our time is running short. But I want to, because, you know, I was watching the, you watch the nightly news here in any network news in the States, and I would say anywhere between 50 and 70% of those ads are for pharmaceutical drugs. Now,
yep.
So are you saying that those are being marketed to just doctors? Because they certainly seem
yes.
like they're being marketed to patients.
No, I know. But what's actually happening here is that that the ads to you and me are aimed at getting us to put even more pressure on the doctor.
Well, sure.
Than all of that. I mean, first of all, there's more marketing budget goes into the doctor than does into the ads to us. But the ads to us aren't really ones where we can actually dictate what we get. They're aimed at getting us to put even more pressure on the doctor, who's the true consumer. And the interesting thing about it is the doctor consumes by putting the pill into you and me so that he has no problems at all when things go wrong. It's unlike a pilot. If you fly from the West Coast to the East Coast, your safety is of ultimate concern to the pilot, because if the plane goes down and you go down, she goes down too. But in the case of a prescription-only drug, if you go down, the doctor doesn't go down. What we need to try and do is re-engineer a world where doctors are as concerned about our safety as pilots are.
And obviously, how much they trust the pharmaceutical companies themselves and the products that they are... that they are so, because sometimes, I mean, and to be fair, an individual doctor may not have made that decision, but a practice has made a decision, or a hospital has made a decision of a certain medicine that will be used.
That's true, and what they don't realize, and again, where they perhaps fail us, as opposed to us being the people who are actually responsible, is that
right.
they've fail to realize that companies only publish about half of the trials they do, and of the trials that are published, close to 100% are ghostwritten, and sometimes to the point where the ghostwriters have taken an essentially negative study of the drug and transformed it into a rosy, positive publication appearing in one of the best journals in the field. And this is what leads the practice or the university hospital to say, well, we'll put this new drug on the formulary. But we really need to, we need to be much more aware of how industry has been able to engineer us into picking the drug that suits them.
The name of the book is Pharmageddon. It is now out from the University of California Press. The author is David Healy. David, I want to thank you very much for being with us this morning. I thank you very much, and best of luck in your work. It was very nice having you with us this morning.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been a great pleasure.
A great pleasure indeed. Thank you. David Healy is the author of Pharmageddon. The book is published by the University of California Press. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.